7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 64 of Color of Magic, your magic and gaming podcast, where we like to talk about all types of issues that sometimes are away from the gaming table, even. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and for 64 episodes, still riding shotgun, is Brian Allen. How you doing, dude?
Doing pretty good. Got Christmas done. Got an Xbox.
What? Who did you murder to get one of those?
I just was monitoring, monitoring all the websites and saw one come through and actually got it into the cart.
Well, that's going to be big for you for all your streaming and stuff coming up.
Yes, it is. Super happy.
Well, as usual, I want to tell everybody, if you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/colorofmagic. For just $2 a month, you can help us keep the lights on and, you know, have lots of cool things and make things and send stuff out. But, you know, it's up to y'all. We want to thank everybody who's already came along for the ride. It's been super appreciative. Really, really awesome to help us out, especially through the year of COVID. To help us get through that with a new podcast. So we're much appreciated. We also want to give appreciation to CardsFear.com. For those of you that don't know about them, which you should if you listen to the show, but you might be new, they're a great place to go sell cards or buy cards at the price you want. And especially right now, you're going to have those credit card bills coming up to pay for stuff for Christmas. Maybe you got some extra Magic cards sitting around you want to sell. It's a great time to go check them out and get rid of some stuff. And the turnaround's pretty quick. You can be paid in about a week's time. So it's pretty awesome. I would check them out. They're great people over at cardsphere.com.
Can confirm. I write over there too. So if you like to read things.
There you go. All right. So we're going to have a pretty interesting show where we're going to talk about some post-pandemic gaming and magic. But to that end, boy, do I have a good one for the soapbox today. So for those of you that follow my other stuff, excuse me, I have a second YouTube channel for Power Dragon Outdoors where we talk about stuff I do outside away from the computer and the gaming table. And been going through some stuff with my chicken. So I have some fun stuff I'm going to get to share with that. But I'm at the feed supply store, tractor supply, whatever you call it in your local vernacular. And I see two different people. One that has, I'm going to call it a crocheted mask. That just, I mean, it literally was just like line of yarn and a gap and a line of yarn and a gap, not realizing that that doesn't really do much. And then I thought that was bad. And then I go down one of the aisles and I see another lady with a sheer mask. Like, imagine sheer lingerie or even like a veil, like a wedding veil. Basically, you can just, air just passes through it. And I'm like, why? Why are you doing this?
She's marrying the virus.
I don't know, man. Like, it was just crazy. Like, and it just kind of, I just felt like the universe was giving me a sign that it was perfect timing with the episode we were going to do today. That this is one of the many, many things we can talk about, right? Even with this whole year and all the news going on and, you know, all the concern and the schools being closed and everything else, like, there's still uncertainty. There's still confusion. And it was awesome to have a guest come on that is somebody who's in the field and can maybe clarify some of that for us. So to that end, we're going to lead right into our interview and we're going to kind of make that the majority of this episode. So you know what we got to do? There you go. We're going to introduce Ian Bukta. And I guess the explanation Ian gives is you are an epidemiologist. So would you like to tell everybody about yourself, Ian, and kind of what epidemiology is, actually, to kind of set the stage for everyone?
Hello, everyone. My name is Ian Bukta. I work with Salt Lake County Health Department, and I am an epidemiologist. So what an epidemiologist is basically someone who studies diseases in people. So, you know, and also in animals that might spill over to people. And so what we do is we just look at populations of organisms and we see how diseases move in them. And, you know, it's a field that's been around for a couple hundred years. Our kind of founding father was a guy named John Snow, not the one you're thinking of. He helped end an outbreak of cholera in London by basically making a map around a pump that was the source of the cholera outbreak. And by using that map, he broke the pump handle. It's a very famous story. It's told at the beginning of, I think, every single class I've ever taken in public health, as though it's a requirement. And he broke that pump handle, and he, depending on how truly you tell the story, the cholera outbreak ended around that time. So it wasn't perfect, but it's the story. That's the story of public health. You know, we are constantly working to find diseases, find their sources, and break transmission in order to keep everyone healthy in our population.
That's actually one of the best and easiest explanations I've heard for that for people. So thank you.
I'll have to thank every class I've ever taken, because that's, as I said, first day of every class, you know, you're getting the Jon Snow lecture. You have four classes, you get four lectures on Jon Snow.
And we did have all last week, we put stuff out on Twitter and in the Discord and took questions from fans and listeners. So we're going to cover some of those. But because you brought it up, one of the first things I want to ask is, I read something, I believe maybe it was in Norway or Sweden, I don't remember, but they had an issue with minks, you know, and I guess for people who don't know, the mink coats come from an animal, you know, but I from what I was reading, those are animals that can carry COVID. So they had to kill a bunch of them. Like, how common is something like that to happen?
Well, so what's interesting is actually in Utah as well, it was widely publicized that we had an outbreak of COVID in minks here as well. So it happened in the United States, which is kind of interesting. But the idea of a disease spilling over from an animal, we call them animal reservoir, into humans is quite common. So influenza goes through like 50 or 60 different animals. There's all kinds of other diseases that are just basically they sit in animal populations and they spill over into humans. So Ebola, you know, is another of those diseases that we hear about it when it spills over, but it's constantly circulating in other organisms. There are great books that have been written on this. Two of my personal favorites and the ones that really originally got me into public health were a book called Spillover by Laurie Garrett. Spillover is by David Quammen, and The Coming Plague is by Laurie Garrett. They may not be the best books to read in the middle of a pandemic, unless you're really interested in disease ecology, because there are a bunch of other diseases that are out there that they haven't spilled over to the same degree that COVID has. COVID is obviously a pandemic in our worst case scenario, but it's just interesting to read about the other diseases that are reservoired in animals that are just kind of out there, and that, you know, epidemiologists and disease ecologists, as well as the medical community, are paying attention to.
That sounds like some pretty heavy reading that I'm going to have to set aside for some really deep moments. All right. So jumping into the questions that were submitted, I think one of the biggest ones right now, or actually a couple of them, kind of look like they revolve around just the vaccines. So I would ask if you're even aware, like, what timeline should somebody who's not a frontline worker, you know, either in medical or science or whatever, expect to be able to get fully vaccinated at this point?
So everything I'm going to say is going to be with the caveat of check with your local and state guidance, because it's going to differ from state to state. Here in Utah, our first wave of long-term care facilities and healthcare workers is ongoing, but we also are looking at our older populations as well. It was recently announced that we're going to be focusing more on the older population, and not using the essential worker distinction. So it's going to depend really on what state you live in. But it's going to be a matter, especially if you're in the younger populations, which a lot of us who play Magic are, it's going to be a couple months. You know, this isn't going to happen overnight. For instance, this Pfizer vaccine has to be kept at an absurdly cold temperature. And that just makes, you know, it quite a logistical challenge. And when you unfreeze it, you've got to use those doses relatively quickly as well. So right now, there's a lot of moving parts. I think, you know, the system is, you know, everyone is working together and trying to figure out exactly how they work together. And as more vaccines are made, and as more types of vaccines, because right now we have Moderna and Pfizer, two vaccines, but there are others that might come to market as well. You know, that could change the timeline as well. But I think the most important thing is read the guidance that your state and local public health are giving out, because that's going to be the best estimate for you wherever you live.
Another question, too, around the vaccines that I think I would say also it comes up a lot in the Black populations, because just openly, like, Black people don't have the best history of medical stuff with the U.S. There's a concern because the vaccine was created in such a short period of time. Can you speak at all to how that was possible compared to normal other vaccines?
Yeah. So this is a different kind of vaccine. It's not a completely new idea. We've known about this for over 10, this type, this, it's called an mRNA vaccine. We've known about this type of vaccine and it's been studied for over 10 years, but obviously not for COVID specifically. That has been over the course of this year. And this is a different kind of vaccine that was that allowed us to make it much more quickly. We actually had the design for it, I believe, as far as I've seen, about 24 to 48 hours after the sequencing of COVID, that someone had proposed this idea. And then, of course, it had to go through rigorous trials. Every study, every phase, and every trial was reviewed by the FDA and a safety board to make sure that the vaccine is going to be ready for the American public. And of course, you know, as public health, we want a vaccine that's going to be studied and go through every single trial, because we have to get this right. The other thing I would say about that, and, you know, I obviously the history of public health and our marginalized population, including the Black community, that, you know, it's been a difficult history, and there have been mistakes and just awful decisions, such as Tuskegee, which was a syphilis study that was allowed to go on even though the cure for syphilis had been discovered, which was an absolute black mark on the public health community. That is something that's at the forefront of everyone's mind. And I think it's important to note that one of the people who led the team for the for this COVID vaccine development is Dr. Kizmekia Corbett. She's a 34-year-old black doctor who has helped pioneer this vaccine process. So I don't, you know, one important thing to think about is that vaccines are created by people. You know, everyone in the scientific community are people at the end of the day. And it so happens that this brilliant woman is one of the people who put together this vaccine, and she also happens to be black. And so it, you know, it at least in my mind gives me more thought to it, that, you know, that there's going to be more representation in the sciences and in the medical community as we roll out this vaccine.
What changes do you think we want to make in the future for, you know, big gaming events and conventions and things along those lines, just in the kind of long term and the short term?
Yeah, this is kind of a hard one to answer. I think one of the things we have to also consider is the timelines in which people are going to get vaccines. And I didn't mention this in the previous question, but people who are 16 and under are not currently allowed, or the vaccine hasn't been tested adequately on them currently. Public health and medical experts are in the process of testing that vaccine on younger populations, but there are a lot of younger players in, you know, Magic the Gathering, in D&D, and that's a huge consideration. If, you know, we're a different subset than the general population, well, what, let's say half your population is under 16 at a convention that you're at. Well, that kind of changes the math, you know, because even if you were to vaccinate every person over 16, that would be a lot of people who aren't quite vaccinated. So it's going to be a kind of, I think as we get out of the pandemic, we'll see, because the pandemic isn't just going to vanish overnight with vaccinations. It's going to be a slow decline as more and more people are able to get their vaccine. So in terms of what are best practices, obviously, you know, not having large events right now is the right choice. And, you know, making sure that we practice good social distancing as the pandemic wanes down and slowly, you know, falls off, maintaining those social distancing, maintaining those masks, is going to be really important. In the future, in the long run, maybe we consider, hey, I'm not feeling so good. I shouldn't go because I have a cough. Because I don't know about you, but I don't know every Magic card out there. And I often have to like look at my opponent's cards, especially I play a lot of Commander. And there's a lot of cards in Commander. And, you know, you're always touching each other's cards. Well, droplets can, and like virus can sit on the cards and the other person picks it up. So, you know, if you're sick in the future, long, you know, year, two, three, whenever COVID is gone and we're playing, you know, staying home, maybe wearing a mask if you're not sure. You know, some of us with allergies aren't sure if we're sick or not. But wearing a mask if you have a little bit of an allergy cough, and maybe, you know, you can help blunt the spread of disease. But that's obviously in the little bit longer term.
Yeah. Another thing to that point, you know, we talk about, hey, if we're not feeling great, maybe we should just wear a mask. And that's something definitely me and my wife have talked about. And we're probably just going to be mask wearers for probably just the foreseeable future. You know, it doesn't make sense to not wear them now. And one of the things we talked about a little bit in the pre-show was that we also aren't getting sick from other things, non-COVID things, because we've all been wearing masks and keeping our distance.
Yeah, and that kind of goes to this idea of transmissibility, or are not, if you're in, you know, into disease nomenclature and terms. But this idea of how easily is a disease spread. So some, like measles, are way off on the, you know, way off the charts with how transmissible they are, but others are a little bit less. Well, COVID is actually more transmissible than influenza. And it's really interesting to see that influenza this year is, you know, quite low. RSV this year is quite low. You know, our different respiratory diseases have been so much lower because social distancing does work.
That's just cool. Yeah, it really is. Like, From a nerdy perspective, it's like we're protecting ourselves from one thing, but we're just gaining extra protections from other stuff.
Yeah.
Another question I want to ask is, there's been some discussion, and I haven't followed it greatly, and you'd definitely know more about this than I would, about the new COVID strain coming up in Europe, particularly in Great Britain. And how will that affect things going forward as people are getting vaccinated?
Yeah. So there are a couple different considerations. The first is we've seen other strains pop up. So the idea that there's a new strain isn't, you know, we've heard about it in the news beforehand, and that doesn't mean specifically that it might be a problem. This one could be a problem, and I'll get into that in a second. But the idea that the virus is changing, well, that's kind of just what viruses do. They aren't super accurate in replicating their RNA. And so you know, mutations will accumulate. So a constant change is expected. However, this one seems to, from the studies that I've seen, be a little bit more transmissible. That, however, I haven't seen anything to the effect that this is going to, you know, cause the vaccine to be less effective. However, we need more of it. So when we talk about herd immunity is the percentage of people in your population that need to be protected with a vaccine in order to protect those who can't get vaccines. And so the number of people who actually will need to get those vaccines, the herd immunity is going to have to be higher because this is more transmissible. Because the more transmissible it is, the easier it is for it to infect someone. So the more people you need to have it to protect to prevent the chance of a susceptible person and an infected person from colliding, basically, if that makes sense.
Okay. And is it reasonable to assume that because we've had so many large, I guess, hotbeds and outbreaks of COVID, that it's likely going to mutate faster than maybe like a regular yearly influenza?
So typically I think influenza has a high, before every immunologist and cell biologist screams, I'm not either of those things. But from what I have read, I believe COVID mutates slower than your yearly influenza. That's why influenza is so hard to deal with, and why we have so many, why we vaccinate every year against influenza, is that it's constantly changing. It has so many different rearrangements and it can go into 60 different species, or more than 60 different species of organisms, not just humans. So it's constantly recombinating. And so that's why influenza is really hard to vaccinate against. And one of the reasons why it's, you know, we get one every year. So COVID shouldn't be mutating faster than influenza. So in that sense, like, we are lucky that so far COVID has been more slow to mutate when compared to other diseases like influenza.
That actually makes it almost more impressive that we've been able to keep the influenza numbers down with everything else going on. Yeah, another question is, with people getting vaccines right now, what are some of the side effects that I guess people could anticipate?
Yeah, and I think this is a great question because I think it's important for everyone to know, like, we in public health and in medicine practice informed consent. Everyone should know what's going to happen to them when they are going to get a vaccine, when they're going to get treatment. That's just what you have to do ethically. And so, yeah, I'd love to talk about the side effects. The most common side effects are that, you know, you're going to have a sore arm after your first dose. You might feel a little fatigued. You might have a little bit of redness and swelling there. You might have a little bit of a headache. After your second dose, you may have a bit of a fever. It's similar in the sense that, you know, some people after influenza shots might get, you know, fever. They might not feel so good for a day. But then it passes. That's totally normal. That's not your body getting the virus. That's your body. That's part of your body learning how to fight the virus. It's kind of doing a practice run after it gets the vaccine. So that's totally expected. Again, it's not you getting the virus. It's not your DNA being changed. It's simply what we expect from a vaccination.
So what you're saying is I'm not turning into an alligator.
You're not.
Yeah, I saw that story last week. I think it was a politician from like Brazil or something, mm-hmm. South America somewhere, that tried to convince people taking the vaccine was going to turn us into crocodiles or some such.
Okay. I was like, what?
Yeah, I think one of the reason why I bring up, you know, specifically the DNA thing is that a lot of people have called this, it's called an RNA vaccine, and it doesn't ever go into your nucleus. It doesn't interact with your actual DNA. But a lot of people have said, oh, like, this is going to go in and you know, mess with the actual underlying DNA. And what this actually does is it's going in and interacting, and basically it's causing your body to create a little bit of spike protein to have your body manufacture its own. It's going to help create the protein that helps your body build a response to COVID, which is really cool when you think about it, and has a lot of really interesting implications in the long term about being able to rapidly design vaccines for the next big outbreak as well as other things that have been hard to target.
That seems like a pretty interesting approach, you know, because I'm glad you clarified that, because I don't think that's something a lot of people know, that it's, because I think when we're told about vaccines, it's often about, okay, well, we're putting some amount of that thing into you so your body learns to fight it effectively. Whereas this is saying, hey, you're just going to get your body prepped to have the thing it needs to have to fight it, which is interesting, honestly. Again, this is a very nerdy conversation, but I like it.
Yeah, there's quite a few different kinds of vaccines, and that's a little bit past the scope of my own knowledge. As I said, I'm not an immunologist, and again, the immunologists and cell biologists might have been screaming a little bit during my explanation of the vaccine itself. So it's worth looking up if you're interested in this sort of thing, checking out, you know, the resources that the CDC has, just to kind of see what's really going on, because it's just a fascinating way of vaccinating someone. So, yeah.
And I guess once we get the vaccines, you know, let's say April, May comes around, everybody's getting their second round. How soon, or actually, will it even be necessary for us to do upkeep shots, say, every 5 or 10 years, like some other things? Like, I don't know, I think tuberculosis or something falls in that category, that you have to take it every so often. Like, is there a belief we'll have to take more vaccines to stay up to date for COVID?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the problem with the disease that emerged literally the, you know, 1 year ago, is that when you try to make a prediction 5 years in the future, 10 years in the future, it becomes pretty difficult. So I wouldn't be shocked if we do have to take boosters, but it's also not uncommon to have to take boosters, right? Like for for measles, mumps, and rubella, we have to take two, and, you know, during a mumps outbreak, sometimes even a third dose is required. So this isn't uncommon that we'd have to get boosters, but unfortunately we really don't have enough data to decide.
Man, I think that's a good thing to be open about too. And I think it's hard for people to accept. You know, I think we talk a lot about like things we take for granted. And I think we live in a world where we have so many conveniences and so many things we understand because it's always been that way. Not realizing that we're utilizing information that's been around for decades already, if not a century plus. And this feels kind of weird to a lot of people being in this scenario where things are kind of evolving and changing in a lot of ways, but this has also only been 1 year removed from us even discovering it was a thing.
Yeah, and I think that also leaves space. You know, a lot of people haven't gotten it right on every piece of information throughout this. And there's a lot of people who, you know, who have gone out and done research and are concerned about, you know, about COVID itself or about these vaccines and might not always get it right. And they might get information that isn't quite correct. And it's always important for us to take a deep breath and acknowledge that it's like people aren't dumb for getting wrong information. It's good that they're going out and trying to learn, especially because right now, you know, over the last year, we are so used to having Google and being able to find out anything. But now we have something that's all of our minds that we can't Google the answer to, because the answer is, well, science is going to figure that out in a month or two. You know, we're running these trials, we're doing the studies, but we don't know for a fact yet. And so I think that's a really interesting kind of hallmark of our time that has really been on my mind, especially around just the public health response.
That does bring up another good point, though, that I can't WebMD COVID and have it tell me I'm getting cancer.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like so many things on WebMD, if I go look it up, like one of the things is or possible cancer. And I'm just like, yeah. Why? I just had a sore throat. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't really use WebMD, so I can't speak to that. But I have heard that before, but I don't know for a fact myself.
Would you say it matters, like, which vaccine people get of the, I guess, two primary ones, and then there's so many more in the pipeline?
Pay attention to the one you get, but if you're getting the two that are on the market right now, Pfizer or Moderna, I think it's useful to know which one you get, but there isn't really a meaningful difference between the two right now. One thing I think I missed in the side effects that I think I probably should put in is that there is the possibility of a slightly stronger allergic reaction. And this is the case in both of these vaccines. And so if you're someone who has to carry an EpiPen, you probably want to talk to your doctor when you go to get the shot. Or I'm sorry, when you go to get this vaccine, you will probably want to both bring your EpiPen and talk with your doctor beforehand just to make sure that there won't be any issues. But yeah, with both of these vaccines, they both confer a good amount of protection. You know, we're talking 90%. It's a shocking amount. I think Dr. Fauci called it, I forget the exact word, but exquisite, I think is the word he used, because it's shockingly high of just how effective these vaccines are. Because a lot of people were thinking about, you know, maybe a 60%. I think AstraZeneca, I saw recently, it just got approved in the UK, maybe yesterday or today, and that one's about 60% effective. And that's kind of what people were expecting. So long story short, the vaccine that you're probably going to be getting, if it is Moderna or Pfizer, I don't know that it matters so much, but it's good to just have record of it in case that, you know, in case one of them ended up needing a booster at one point or another.
Okay.
I guess when we talk about getting back to...
Can I cut you off for just one sec? One caveat to that is definitely remember which vaccine you get the first dose of, because you need to make sure that the second dose you get is also that exact vaccine. We haven't tested, you know, a Moderna and Pfizer or a Pfizer and Moderna. That hasn't been tested. So what you want to do is get Pfizer and Pfizer, because this is a two-dose vaccine, somewhere between 3 and 4 weeks. Each one is specific, and your doctor will likely, or wherever you get vaccinated, will likely hand you a card that tells you when you need to be revaccinated.
Okay.
That's actually good to know. I hadn't even considered that. Like, I mean, I knew there was two you had to get, but I hadn't even thought about, like, well, what happens if I try to piece together my own vaccine between the two of them?
That's when you turn into an alligator.
That's probably how it happens.
Yeah, there's no, obviously, you won't turn, it's likely you won't turn into an alligator. You aren't going to turn into alligator, but we don't know. And we do know for a fact, if you use the two, you know, if you use Pfizer and Pfizer, or Moderna and Moderna, we know it's going to give you a really high level of protection against COVID. However, you have to wait until your second dose, about a week to 2 weeks after, for that protection to truly kick in.
Yeah, that's actually, I guess, something else we should bring up. You know, how long after you get your second one, you know, what's the waiting period to be considered fully vaccinated or protected to that 90%+ after you get your second shot?
Yeah, so I think importantly, it is just, you know, 95% effective. It is possible to still get infected even though you had a vaccine, but the severity is likely to be much reduced and your chance of getting it is so much lower. Again, 90-something% lower. But it is about a week to 2 weeks after your second dose. So that means, you know, if you are getting the vaccine, it's, you know, you get the vaccine, you have that wait period, you get the second dose of the vaccine, and you have another week or two before you probably have protection.
Now, going back to talking about events and stuff, or I guess just general population, like I don't know, does being an epidemiologist, do you have a number or a concept of what percentage of the population should be vaccinated before we deem, I guess, normal activities again to be safe?
Yeah. So part of it is, you know, what I think the important thing to do is, I'm not, you know, the person running the calculations or the models, but I saw that Dr. Fauci says between 70-85% is probably the sweet spot for COVID. It's a little bit hard to tell. Part of it, I think his 70-85% number, you know, isn't like, oh, it's just 80%. Or, you know, it's not identical to what we would need for measles, which is, you know, 95%. And that has to do with the transmissibility of the virus. But yeah, I think if Dr. Fauci says 70-85%, that's probably where it's going to lie.
And this feels, and this is just kind of, I think, more of a conversation piece more than like there's actual data to it. But would it be unreal, you know, if I'm an event organizer in the future to say like, well, at least till, let's say, until the end of next year, if I'm running an event, you kind of have to come with your proof of a vaccine. Like, or is that too much to ask of people and say, like, we just shouldn't be doing events?
That's going to be a decision that that private companies are going to have to make. I don't know, one, if it's constitutional, or two, if that's a direction that public health will want to go. That's definitely a decision that's way above my pay grade. I have seen chatter about it in the news, you know, of airlines or different organizations that are going to, you know, that are potentially mulling over the idea of requiring a vaccine. That is, you know, that is something people are talking about. And that's both an ethical question as well as an epidemiological one. And unfortunately, I'm not an ethicist.
No, that's totally okay. Like I said, these are just questions that came up and I'm like, man, I have no idea. Some make for good conversation, but I myself, you know, having previously run a lot of events, I don't even think I would attempt to run anything until I see a lot of people have probably been vaccinated, or at least until like mid to late summer sometime. You know, I couldn't imagine doing it in the spring for sure. And even then, I'm like, man, I would probably feel the need to have a lot of precautions taken. You know, we've talked on the show before about, I don't think it'd be unreal to say, okay, I need 10 or 12 hand sanitizer stations. Like, everybody's going to have to wear masks. You know, like, I would probably be way too paranoid to have more than like, I don't know, even 100 people at an event in the first one that I do.
Yeah, Magic is an amazing game. But again, like when you get to Commander, which is inherently a social format, and you're all sitting together and you're touching each other's cards, or like, I don't know how often people touch their each other's cards in Standard. I've never really played Standard. I played mostly kitchen table Magic growing up. But when you're all clumped in, like, you know, you are at an LGS, like, yeah, that is definitely a higher risk situation. And again, like, hand sanitizer, I think, is super important, because I don't know about you, I don't really often wash my sleeves. I probably should more than I do for my cards, you know, just alcohol swab the outsides. But I know all the time I play a lot of really weird cards and people are always picking mine up. And like, what the heck? Why are you playing this like uncommon from Mercadian Masks? And, you know, that's also a lot of people touching your card. Well, that's, you know, a lot. We call it fomites, or just, you know, droplets on the surface where that contain virus that can potentially spread it.
And, you know, that's one of the things I've considered, because having a year where a lot of people, even in Standard, haven't physically handled a lot of the cards, you're going to be in scenarios where people aren't going to be familiar with the artwork even to quickly recognize what a card does, or may need to reread the words on it because they haven't played that many games against that card yet. Because we just, a lot of people haven't been playing as much Magic as they normally play. I mean, Arena's been a good replacement in the short term, but, you know, we're, some of us are trying to make do with Spell Table, you know, for paper Magic, doing what we can. But I think it'll be interesting to see how we get back to just reacting in those scenarios.
Absolutely. And also, two other things, even when you know other people's cards, my favorite Commander deck is Haldon and Paco, which is a deck about stealing other people's things off the top of their decks, which I don't know that I'd be comfortable playing if we're all handling each other's cards.
Right.
And also, you know, with Standard, you know, there's 27 or whatever different prints of that core 21 Teferi, and so you might not recognize that, you know, with all of the different prints, or like the collector's edition, or, you know, from Zendikar Rising, that they had different things. So I think you bring up a really good point there as well.
Yeah, there's just so much of that. I think when we saw Commander Legends a month ago, actually, it hadn't been that long ago. It's hard to remember in COVID times, but but a month ago, you know, we have a card that literally it goes in and steals cards from people's libraries. And I was like, man, I don't even know if I'd even want to play with that card right now. It's such a weird feeling.
Yeah. One of the guys in my play group cracked one in his Commander Legend pack. I just told him I'm not doing this over Spell Table. Like, it's a great card, whatever. Like, I could just tell you the best card in my deck, but I'm not reading 100 cards out to you over Spell Table.
Yeah. I kind of wondered how that would work. I've played, I think, 5 or 6 Spell Table games at this point, and I haven't had anything like that come up, fortunately. So I'm kind of lucky in that regard. So I guess as we talk more about sort of settling into normal, from the perspective of your field, I guess under the current situation and timeline, as we've seen some people getting the vaccines, we're seeing a slow rollout of other stuff. Like, when is a reasonable expectation for people to say, like, okay, this is when I can maybe feel more comfortable going shopping regularly or going and hanging out at the mall or whatever? Because I think that's what some people are kind of wanting to know, is like, at what point do I not have to just stay at home now?
Yeah. So one thing to know is there's not going to be one day that we go from, you know, a couple thousand cases in your state to zero. What's going to happen is, as more and more people are vaccinated, we're going to kind of see a slow decline, especially if people maintain, this is going to be hard, I know, but if we maintain social distancing in combination with the vaccine, that's going to help accelerate the decline of COVID cases throughout our country. So I think with a combination of, you know, social distancing and the vaccines, you know, and also we do see a seasonality to respiratory viruses. And COVID, we've seen, as it's gotten colder, has gotten a lot, you know, there've been a lot more cases. So, you know, as we approach summer, if we, you know, we may be able to go out and do a little bit more, as long as we're still, you know, wearing our masks, washing our hands, and we might be able to have a bit more of a summer. Again, I think we have to just be ready to kind of, I think the fact that people under 16 aren't going to be getting vaccinated until probably the fall, that's when we'll have been able to really fulfill every study, you know, every study in every phase to ensure that this vaccine is, you know, safe for children as well as adults, because I'm married to a pediatrician. And one thing she always tells me is that kids aren't just tiny adults. You know, they have an entirely different, they have developmental things going on. So sorry, this is a long way to say it's going to be a couple more months before the disease is going to, or the cases are going to continue to fall down. So I think one of the things to do is watch your own numbers, and listen to the guidance of your local and state public health authorities, because ultimately, like, those are the people who are going to be best positioned to tell you, like, what is and isn't the best practices for where you live.
That's reasonable. I'll just be cautiously optimistic to buy that new barbecue pit that I'll get to put to you. I won't buy it yet, but I'll keep my eye on it. Like, this is actually a pretty informative conversation, you know, and I'm glad you came on for this, because one of the big beliefs I have is it's a lot of people will not pay attention to information until it's put into a context that matters for them on a personal level. And in this regard, you know, we do have a lot of gamers, obviously, that listen to the show. And I think getting to hear somebody speak about it on a basic level and talk about it in regards to events and things that they care about will hopefully help spread some positive knowledge.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking the time to let me on, let me come on and talk about this. And also, all of you out there, I hope that you do end up getting vaccinated, because I play a Haldon and Paco deck, and my over spell table, my play group is super not happy about it, because it's just like, oh, let me write down these 10 cards every game. And yeah, like, when we're all vaccinated and we're all properly social distancing, we'll be able to get back and go and play in person like we have all been waiting to do for months, because there's just nothing better than in-person magic.
That is absolutely true.
Even without spell table, rifling through an entire commander deck seems, that seems annoying.
It's not the most pleasant experience. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But all right, we're going to wrap this up, everybody. As usual, wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And at least for a little longer, while we're still waiting on those vaccines, wear your mask, wash your hands, stay away from other humans, so we can get back to gaming and gathering sooner rather than later. If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us at our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, other patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at Color of MTG. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.